30. Caro took the morning's first express flight to Grand Cayman. Trevor, Molly, Barbara, and Julian had each offered to accompany her. All of them understood when she refused. The Grand Cayman Psychiatric Facility, Linden Cliffs, although there were neither Lindens nor Cliffs anywhere in evidence, was a revelation. The psychiatric wing of Fairleigh Memorial had been built midway through the last century, when nurses wore starched white uniforms and a brutal version of electroshock was overused for everything. Since then, the wing had been maintained, barely, on a scrawny budget. Patients' rooms were small and shared. The day room badly needed painting. The nurses' station had looked like a shabby fortress. Not so at Linden Cliffs, which was not a facility for patients dependent solely on health insurance. Caro, torn between gratitude that Julian had brought Ellen here and resentment that, on her own, she could never have afforded this for her sister, marveled at the luxury. Single rooms with tasteful furnishings, original art on the corridor walls, a day room like a country club, periodic entertainment brought in from Miami. Fairleigh Memorial had the high school glee club twice a year. A staff-to-patient ratio comparable to a fine spa. Three psychiatrists with impressive reputations. Caro had researched them. She met with Ellen's doctor, Edward Silverstein. Dr. Silverstein was not happy with Ellen's proposed transfer to Cayman Brac, but Bill Haggerty had produced enough legal papers to release Ellen to anywhere, even against all medical advice.
"You understand, Dr. Soames Watkins, that your sister eats only minimally, participates in no activities, including therapy, does not move unless led, and says nothing except Angelica is dead."
"I do understand that," Caro said. Silverstein had compassionate eyes and a genuine concern for his patient, but right now, he was an obstacle in Caro's way. "Ellen will have medical supervision on Cayman Brac, and we won't remove her from here until you can certify that she has improved substantially."
"And why do you seem so confident that will happen soon?"
"I can't say for sure, of course. But despite this temporary collapse, Ellen has tremendous resilience and courage. Grief and her meds make that hard to see right now, I know." Finally, Caro was led to Ellen's room on a nonviolent floor. Ellen sat in a leather wing chair that could have graced an Oxford University commons.
"Mrs. Kemp, your sister is here to see you," the orderly said. "Dr. Soames Watkins, if you need anything, just call out."
"Thank you." Caro pulled up a second chair to face her sister. "I'm here, Sissy. How are you doing?" Ellen said,
"Angelica is dead."
"I know. It's Caro, Ellen.
Caro."
A glance of acknowledgement, gone in an instant.
"Angelica is dead. Yes. But, Ellen,
no, look at me. I'm here to tell you something important." Caro took a deep breath and glanced over her shoulder. She didn't want to sound unbalanced, not in this place. "I know how much you miss Angelica. I miss her too." Angelica, looking up from her crib to give Caro one of her rare smiles. Angelica's sweet baby warmth as Caro walked her up and down the living room.
She fought to keep her voice steady.
"But listen to me, Sissy. I know how you can see Angelica again."
"Angelica is dead. Yes, but listen.
No, keep looking at me.
I want you to trust me." Caro took her sister's hand. This was it then. She'd needed to see Ellen for herself before she made her decision, before she set the machinery in motion to carry out that decision. Now she had seen her sister. Ellen was in great need, just as their father had been. But Caro was here for Ellen. No one, after the sister's disinheritance, had been there for their father. She said, "We've always trusted each other, haven't we? And you know that I've been working with our great uncle on a secret project about the brain. You remember that, don't you? Of course you do. You're smart, and you can follow what I say."
The secret project involves your mind going into other universes. And in some of those universes, Angelica is still alive. Alive and healthy. You can go there with your mind. Not in imagination, for real, with your mind. You can't stay long, but you can go there and see Angelica. Alive, in a real place. Real, Ellen.
Angelica is dead,
Ellen said. But was it with a shade less torpor? Ellen added,
I want to die. Kayla is better off without me. And Angelica is dead.
Caro struggled to hide her shock and keep her voice steady.
In this universe, Angelica is dead, but not in the other universes. You can see her, hold her, talk to her.
Ellen's face came to life. Her eyes blazed. Her head jerked up. She socked Caro in the face so hard that Caro's teeth rang and her mouth filled with blood. The blow shook something loose in Ellen, some old sisterly feeling, some sliver of who she really was. She said,
Oh, you're hurt!
Snatched off her own sweater and pushed it against the blood streaming down Caro's face and onto her shirt. Caro gasped, spat blood onto the sweater, and felt her face. Pain, like a fireball, shot across her jaw and up through her skull. But her nose wasn't broken, and her teeth seemed intact. And now, Ellen was staring at her, instead of at nothing. And Caro grabbed the moment. Ellen said,
Angelica is dead.
Trust me one more time, damn it to hell! I'm Caro! Ellen nodded slowly, as if her neck were a rusty winch coming to life.
Caro.
And then,
see, Angelica, again.
Yes, in another place. You can visit there. An echo of George's voice saying, but there is no there or here. You understand that, don't you?
I'm sorry, Ellen said next. I'm sorry, but can you?
She burst into tears. Footsteps in the corridor. Quickly, Caro stood, blocking any view of Ellen from the doorway and keeping her own back turned. The orderly's voice said, Everything okay here, doctor?
Yes, thank you,
Caro sang, and wondered, for days after, how she found the lilting voice, the cheery tone. Lilting and cheery were not her style, even when she hadn't just been punched in the face. The footsteps moved on. Caro wiped the rest of the blood from her throbbing nose. She had only a short time before her face swelled and her bruises turned purple. Ellen, listen. To see Angelica again, you have to be released from here and come to my project on Cayman Brac. That means you have to eat, have to talk in group, have to do whatever they say. And this is very, very important. You can't tell anyone about this. No one. It's a secret. If you tell anyone, you can't see Angelica.
Cruel to be kind. Where was the quote from?
Julian might have known.
Yes, a secret.
Did she understand? Caro peered from her rapidly closing eye at her sister and decided that she did. Ellen was Ellen again. In the same way that Lorraine and Weigert and Ivan, hooked to machines, were not themselves until they were unhooked. There was nothing medical about this perception. It was of the spirit, not the brain, and Caro didn't want to go there. She shoved the bloody sweater into her purse, grabbed another from Ellen's closet, and put it on over her stained shirt. The sweater was far too big for her. Caro leaned over and kissed her sister, who said only,
How long?
Depends on your behavior here. Do everything they say. I have to go now.
Yes,
Ellen said. And then,
You saved me from drowning in the fountain.
Where was Ellen's mind now? Somewhere in the past? Did she really understand? Caro's face felt on fire. She walked rapidly down the corridor, her face turned sideways toward the wall. If she'd had a hat, she could have pulled it low over her forehead. Why hadn't she brought a hat? Why didn't she own a hat?
She signed herself out of the floor, watched by a desk clerk who looked at her curiously but said nothing.
Outside the building, she called for an Uber to take her to the cheapest hotel near the airport. She was supposed to catch the next plane, but right now she needed a hotel room, if only for a few hours. In the car, she used her phone to send an email to Weigert. She needed him again. He was the only person who could, or would, help her with this. The hotel clerk barely glanced at her. Maybe this particular Econo Lodge saw a tsunami of women who'd been slugged in the face. On that depressing thought, Caro found the ice machine on her floor, sat in a chair in her room, and applied an ice pack made of a thin, scratchy washcloth. She had ibuprofen in her purse. Her cell phone rang. Julian. She ignored it. Ellen was back. Sort of. Temporarily. And perhaps only if Caro could deliver what she'd promised. The illusion of Angelica, alive in an alternate universe. Ellen, always more romantic and suggestible than Caro, might believe the illusion was real, and be comforted, be saved. Already Ellen's personality had begun to emerge from her depression, like a sunken boat being raised from the sea bottom. And what did that say about personality? That it was completely the result of circumstances. And when those changed, so did a person's fundamentals? Caro's father, going from an abject, dominated mouse to a man with enough resolution to kill himself. Kayla, going from talkative and sunny to a sullen child acting out rage. Ellen, resilient enough to joke her way through anything until she couldn't. Caro iced and paced. The hotel room was 10 steps in one direction, 8 in the other. The blood did not wash out of her shirt, but cold water did lighten and smear the stain. She dried the shirt with the hotel hairdryer and put it back on under Ellen's sweater. Ice and pace. Pace and ice. Julian called again and again. The fourth time, she answered and told him through swollen lips that she would arrive on Cayman Brac on the last express flight, landing at 8 p.m. Trevor called. But although she didn't pick up, she was nonetheless warmed by the mere fact of the call. Then she made the call that counted. George. Her email had said she'd talk to him when she got back to Brac, but she couldn't wait. Ellen couldn't wait. They talked for a long time. When she eventually left for the airport by a side door, her credit card would be charged automatically for the room. Her face was turning the colors of several varieties of squash. Spirit and brain. One, at least, was solid matter. But if George could believe that the brain itself was a mental construction, part of consciousness-generated reality, Caro would help Ellen believe that, too. Sometimes you had to take what you could get. Assuming that George could convince Julian and Watkins to give it to her.